Well, good morning, church. All of you joining us online this morning, and for the two people here live with me on Saturday afternoon, wherever you find yourself, I hope you are warm. I hope you are safe. I hope overnight you let the water drip from your faucets so they don't freeze. And as JJ said, please let us know if there's something you need during this time. If you find yourself in need, just remember, even though while all of us are hunkering down and riding out this cold snap and the potential snow and everything that's coming our way, you're not alone. We're here for you. We're here to help. Well, another Super Bowl has come and gone, and there are several things for the casual fan or maybe the drive-by observer of the game. If you're the kind of person that maybe watched a little bit of game and a whole lot of commercials and halftime, there's a lot of things that would be easy to miss if you weren't paying attention. So if all you did was watch a little bit of the game, but you didn't listen to the commentary and the talking heads leading up to the game starting or anything going on during the game, if all you saw was just the play on the field, it would be easy to miss that the quarterback for the Super Bowl winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady, is 43 years old. Now at 48, 43 sounds young, except when you're talking about professional athletes, especially when you're talking about professional football players, because 43 is ancient, and yet he looked great on the field. This is his seventh Super Bowl victory. He doesn't look like he's slowing down. And in fact, at 43 years old, playing that well at such an elite level, I'm going to be honest, Tom Brady has inspired me to take a hard look at my life and my accomplishments, or lack thereof. I've done some inventory, and I have decided that I am going to announce right now that I am eligible for this year's NFL draft. Now, granted, I am a little bit older than Brady, but not much, and I haven't quite taken care of my body the way that he has. And if truth be told, I throw like a first grader and a very weak first grader at that. But what some of you may not know is that in middle school, I played quarterback. And I don't mind to tell you, this may sound like I'm bragging, but I was pretty average in middle school. So I'm just saying, after this year's draft, you may not see me. And if you first tuned into TV and you didn't know about all the COVID safety protocols that were going on at the game, and you saw shots of the crowd, then it would have been easy to miss that the stands were not, in fact, packed with people as it looked on first sight. There were 25,000 fans in a stadium that holds 65,000, an outdoor stadium, and at least 7,500 of those stands were medical workers who had gotten their vaccine and they were invited to watch for free, and they also spread them out between other fans to act as buffers. But when you look in the stands and they look full, there's a reason for that, because not only were there 25,000 real people, but there were 30,000 or more cardboard cutouts that people could pay $100 and have a cutout of their image in the stands. And the money supposedly went to charity and it was all good. But not everyone put their own image on cardboard cutouts. So if you looked closely, you would also see that there were celebrities in the stands, like Ozzy Osbourne. Eminem and Bernie Sanders make it in the same image, the Bernie Sanders meme. Billie Eilish is there. Karate Kid, Ralph Macchio is there. In one image, there's a dog and Santa at the same time. And if you were just a casual fan, and again, didn't read a lot of stories leading up to or following the Super Bowl, then it would have been easy to miss that history was made at this Super Bowl. And I'm not just talking about Tom Brady and 7 Super Bowl wins. I'm talking about the fact that a woman, Sarah Thomas, was the first woman to ever be an official in a Super Bowl. And if you haven't heard much of her story, she was the first woman to be an official in a playoff game a couple of years ago. She was the first woman to be an official in the NFL. Before that, she was an official in college football. And the executive vice president of football operations, Troy Vincent Sr. for the NFL, said about Sarah, "Her elite performance and commitment to excellence has earned her the right to officiate the Super Bowl." And I, for one, am glad that he said that. Because when we hear stories like this, sometimes people will respond, "Well, that's just a token hire. That is a gift." But he's making sure that we know it's not a token hire. It's not a gift. She earned it. She has worked hard to get here. She has worked long to get here. She has worked her way up the ranks and done it with excellence to get there. And here's the thing, Sarah wasn't the only one making history. 2 of the assistant coaches for the winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers were women. 1 is an assistant defensive line coach. 1 is a strength and conditioning coach. She has a PhD in physical therapy. And when players were interviewed about the contributions that they make, all the players raved about the different things they brought to the tables, the different ways that they helped them in their game, helped them physically, helped them psychologically and mentally prepare. But I like what the strength and conditioning coach said when asked about the experience. She said, "I do look forward to the day when it's no longer newsworthy to be a woman working in the pros or the Super Bowl. I hope we get to the point where all people are afforded equal opportunities to work in professional sports because there are a lot of great qualified coaches out there." Now, I'm thankful that there were reporters who were telling their stories, because if they hadn't, I would have missed it. Their stories would have been easy to miss. But what they're saying is they're hoping things get to the point where it is easy to miss, where their stories are no longer celebrated as extraordinary, but they're just seen as ordinary. People who work hard, who have the talent, who put in the time, and they rise in their fields. So when we look through the gospel, and especially the gospel of Luke, we see that there are actually stories like this all over the place. And I've tried to highlight different stories of this nature of unexpected people doing ordinary things, and yet it is extraordinary because of who they are and how they were viewed and their place in that society at the time. These are the kinds of stories that would have stood out to the original hearers. But 2,000 years later, for us, the way we read through the Gospels, they can sometimes be easy to miss. Like aspects of this well-known story from Luke 10. So if you have your Bibles at home and you want to follow along, we're going to read from Luke 10, starting in verse 38. And you'll also be able to read that on your screen. "As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Now, you may remember that Mary and Martha are really close to Jesus. And part of how we learn about this is from a story from John 11, when their brother Lazarus dies and they call for Jesus to help, but he doesn't get there in time. And by the time they have their interaction, this is the story where Jesus weeps. He weeps over the pain that Mary and Martha are experiencing. He weeps over the death of Lazarus and all of the people who are grieving around them. And compared to that story of a recently dead man now walking, this squabble over the housework may seem kind of minor, but there's more going on in this story that can be easy to miss. We have all often boiled this story down to one basic message, and that is about avoiding the Martha syndrome. And the Martha syndrome is often described as being so engrossed in our work, in good things, that we lose sight of, we lose track of the most important things. And that's a good message to come from this passage, no question. And I always think it's important to note that what Martha is doing is a good thing. She is being hospitable. She is taking care of her guests. And it's also important to note that Martha was playing her expected role in that society perfectly. Because in the ancient Jewish household, there were men's tasks and women's tasks, men's spaces and women's spaces. And Martha was doing what a Jewish woman at the time was expected to do. And so there's no question that probably part of what concerned Martha was that Mary was just sitting there near Jesus. That part of what concerned Martha was that Mary wasn't carrying her weight in the food prep and the house prep and all of those responsibilities. And none of us like to be the only one doing the work when we see other people sitting around. And that might have been a part of it, but I'm convinced that wasn't the totality of her concern. I'm also convinced that for early hearers of the gospel, that's probably not the thing that stood out the most in this story. Certainly not the only reason for the beef between Martha and Mary. It would have been that Mary was sitting in the men's space doing the men's work. Because in the ancient world, when they talked about sitting at the feet of another, that's not just a description of location. To sit at one's feet, especially one who is a teacher, makes you the pupil. To sit at the feet of a rabbi makes you the disciple. And the disciple is a learner, but the disciple is more than that. A disciple is an imitator, an apprentice, learning not learning's sake, but they're learning to do what the master is doing, learning to live it, to teach it, to share it, to proclaim it, all of the lessons of the master. So Paul refers to this in Acts chapter 22. Acts is Luke's second version of this story about Jesus and his disciples, his followers. And he talks about there how he sat at the feet of Gamaliel, a famous rabbi at the time. Paul was one of his disciples. He was one of Gamaliel's students. So when Jesus tells Martha that she's worried about a lot of things, but it's really one thing that matters, that's needed. And Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Jesus is doing two important things. One is Jesus reminds us of the priority that discipleship should take for all of us. And that's not denigrating any of the jobs we have to do on a daily basis. We all have daily tasks. We all have daily responsibilities. We have important work to do, whatever that work may be. And when we do that work, we want to do that as if it is for the Lord. But being a disciple of Jesus means prioritizing what is of first importance. And that is denying ourselves, putting all that we are behind what it means to take up a cross, to sit at the feet, and follow Jesus daily. That which is best must always take priority over that which is good. But there's a second thing that Jesus is also doing. Jesus reaffirms Mary's place as a disciple at his feet. And that's available to everyone. And that part of the story is what is easy to miss for a lot of us. And the significance of that part of the story is what is easy to miss for a lot of us. But there is no question that that would have stood out as enormously significant to the original hearers of the gospel, if not scandalous to some of the original hearers of the gospel. It is an act of elevation and inclusion of this woman. And as you read through the gospel, you start to see that this sort of thing is actually everywhere, although it is easy to miss. So in Matthew 12, Jesus is pointing to his disciples and he describes them as men and women, a mixed group. These followers are my brother and sister and mother. And in Luke 8, we learn women travel with Jesus as his disciples, but they actually do so much more. And this is a wonderful story that is so easy to miss, and I missed for so long. After this, Jesus traveled about from town to town and village to village, and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases, Mary called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had come out, Joanna, the wife of Cusa, the manager of Herod's household, Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. So part of what Luke reminds us is there are women disciples as a part of this traveling group with Jesus, learning from Jesus, sharing the message of Jesus. But Luke goes out of his way to let us know that it is women who are funding these trips, who are paying for these trips. They are the benefactors. And that is a highly respected, highly honored position of prominence and influence in the ancient world. In fact, ancient writers would often go out of their way to work in the names of the benefactors, patrons or matrons who had given large sums of money to support someone. And Luke does this in the gospel, honoring them and recognizing them. And as Bryce said to me shortly before this sermon, isn't it amazing, isn't it hilarious that it is someone from Herod's household who is helping fund the Jesus movement? This woman from Herod's household and others. And the more we read through Luke, the more we see this kind of thing all over the place. So early in this series, I pointed out the significance in chapter 1 and chapter 2 of the faith of Martha and Mary and how their example is lifted up over Zechariah and Joseph. And in chapter 2, when Jesus is 8 days old and brought to the temple to be circumcised, there are two little known figures who are highlighted as examples of faithfulness. There is a righteous man at the temple named Simeon, and there is a long-serving widow named Anna, who Luke tells us is a prophet. She is one who speaks words of God to the people of God, to inform, to enlighten, to encourage, and challenge. And it has long been pointed out that when it comes to the cross, all of the men flee except for John, but there is a whole slew of women disciples who are there. And when it comes to the empty tomb, the first witnesses to the empty tomb to proclaim the message of what they saw and the message they heard from the angel that Jesus is risen, the first witnesses are women, which is an extraordinary thing for God to do. Since women could not serve in the Jewish courts as witnesses, because their testimony was considered unreliable. And yet, who does God choose to be the witnesses? Witnesses in what they see, witnesses in what they share. They are the proclaimers of the good news, the turning point of history, the hope of the world that Jesus Christ is risen. And I could go on and on about how Jesus in Luke repeatedly put stories and parables of faithful women right beside those of faithful men. It's all over the gospel. So why spend so much time pointing this out? Because while it would have stood out to the first hearers of the gospel, for us, for a long time, it's been easy to miss. The way history is usually told, the stories of the powerless are easy to miss because often they are left out. And if they're included, they are minimized. But over and over, what do we witness in the gospel? We witness the gospel lifting up stories of the people who are usually left out and looked over. Foreigners, Samaritans, the centurion, people who are sick, people with disabilities, people who are poor, those who are marginalized in the society, the meek and the vulnerable, and women. Lots and lots of stories of faithful women recognizing their incredible contribution, lifting up the voice of these women, highlighting the example that they provide. While women were often pushed to the side, what does Jesus do? He includes them by his side. And while their contributions were often lost in the shadows of history, the gospel keeps bringing them into the light, and not as a token. It is earned. It is deserved by their faithfulness, by their generosity, by their sticking by the side of Jesus when so many flee, when so many turn their back, when so many turn against him. The gospel makes it clear that their stories should be told, their contributions should be celebrated, their faith should be recognized, their virtues should be imitated, their witness to the risen Jesus should be heard. Their stories have been so easy to miss. But their stories are told for a reason. And they need to be told even more. Their voices need to be heard. That is something the church cannot afford to miss.